listening to the Albion Roar on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, on our podcast, just about everywhere. We're brought to you in association with the wonderful oldfootballshirts.com, and as ever, we thank Phil Shelley for his continued support. So here we are at the end of the year, at the end of the decade, one of the most fascinating decades that we've had in the club's history. I'm joined here by Andy Bass. Andy, I'm afraid, has let me loose in the studio. I mean, what could go wrong? So we're going to be looking over the year and we're going to be looking over the decade. We're not going to do this by chronological necessarily. We're not even going to do it by stats because stats hurt my head. So we're just going to have a good natter. Two middle-aged old farts who are just going to spend our time looking back as we always do. We hope you had a great Christmas. Andy Bass, have you had a great Christmas?
Yeah, it's been very, very enjoyable. Lovely couple of days, the last couple of days.
Fantastic.
Spoilt by an annoying game of football, but, but you know, that's sport, isn't it?
Yes, it's what you signed up for.
Yeah.
So, okay, here we go. Should we start at the beginning of the year? We're going to do 2019. We didn't really see, it's fair to say, we didn't really see what was coming between January and May. We weren't brilliant in the first half of the season, but we kept our heads above water and we were quite nicely mid-table. You couldn't really see what was coming, could you?
No. I have to say, I was very optimistic at the turn of the year.
Yep.
Very optimistic. We thought this is an amazing start. We kind of almost didn't, you know, we just pinched ourselves to believe it, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah.
So I can't remember exactly how many points we were on, but we're certainly like 20 plus. And we thought, well, this Premier League lark is maybe not as difficult as we thought it was going to be. And then I think we did get a sense of the writing on the wall with the...
Do you remember the first game of the season? Oh, sorry, first game of the year.
It was the 2-2 draw at the Olympic Stadium.
It was.
Where we sadly threw away a
comfortable lead.
A comfortable lead for the second year in a row. We appear to be totally dominating against West Ham, and then it just all disappeared. I just remember leaving the stadium feeling exceedingly flat, and then that was basically starting as we meant to go on because it got fairly grim after that.
It was largely as good as we got. Can you actually put your finger on how and why it went so wrong?
I think my overall feeling is that we played scared in that second half of the season.
But what turned us scared?
The pressure of the table, the pressure of getting points. I think, you know, the squad was fairly thin. I think it, you know, lacked confidence, and I think we lacked firepower up front. And Chris had,
story.
And Chris had decided to put all his eggs in the defensive basket, and it, you know, against, you know, we just didn't have the quality in the end. I think we just, you know, we had lack of belief, and then we settled onto a very rigid style of playing, and for the most part it didn't work, and we were unable to react to it. It was a really sad decline. I mean, I know there were rumblings about, I think we had like a run of about three games or something in October, very much like this season actually, where we won a few games at home 1-0, when people said, oh, maybe we're papering over the cracks here. And I didn't really go along with that.
Yeah.
But, you know, that certainly seemed to be the case.
As we moved into
the beginning of this year,
we just seem to regress and regress and regress, and like play further and further back. And I mean, this is from memory. When you look at the games, you think, well, actually, we did break out now and again. But and seeing as you have something so clear to judge it against, as in the first half of this season, the second half of the year, you know, the differences, the contrast couldn't be more stark. So when you're looking at this game. And, you know, we're on there, we're defending Chris, we're saying it's not happening, and you know, we're grumbling and mumbling. And you get to see that, you know, it's ridiculous as just to how defensive we were, playing one up, you know, who was 40 yards. And you think, this is stuff from the 80s. This is John Beck. This is Graham Taylor. You lump it up to the big man and hope that the big fella, you know, the next fella's going to come up and catch him up. And you think, how is this working? Just so much the ball was long ball.
Yeah, and you know, it was playing a lot with Glenn having to like carry the load. We just didn't have the bodies up front. We couldn't really rotate that many.
I'm not sure Glenn can rotate.
Yeah, not yeah, and he did tremendously well.
Mm.
But certainly not having a go at him. Midfield were clearly shackled. With Stevens and Purper getting nosebleeds crossing the halfway line.
Sure.
And we were just completely reliant on Duncan Duffy just literally getting in the way of everything, which they did absolutely superbly. But again, you need to, with any successful team, you need each unit to sort of take a share of the load.
Mm.
And I just think we were too reliant. We were too reliant on one part of the team, and if they had if they had an off day, which quite frankly,
it's rarer to have an on day.
Yeah, then we're going to get punished. And yeah, I mean it sadly was just, I think, fear trying to make, we hadn't spent a massive amount in the transfer market. And I think it was sort of a make-do-amend second half of the season, and it was probably
it
was really, really bad to watch. And
it was Crystal Palace that bailed us out. I mean, that hurts.
Yeah,
By beating Cardiff. Beating Cardiff on the second to last game of the season, because Cardiff ended up beating Manchester United. If Cardiff had got anything against Palace that particular day, because Palace were good away, dreadful at home. So thankful it was down at. I was about to say Ninian Park, down at the Cardiff City Stadium. Yeah, I should get that.
Yeah.
If Cardiff had got anything out of that, we'd have gone through the trap door.
Yeah.
And the I can understand now, obviously, since then we've interviewed Tony Bloom, and we've done it with the hindsight of having Graham Potter in and changing things around. But even when we interviewed him, you could see the frustration. Loves Chris Hughton to bits. But you could see the frustration in his face when you're taking him back sort of 8 months, and not exactly crying, but shaking your head in disbelief, saying, "How could it have gone so horribly wrong?" I looked up the stats. We won two games in the first part of 2019. The second half of the season against Huddersfield and Palace. After that, apart from that, we didn't win a game. I think, was it 9 points in the second half of the season?
Something like that.
Something ridiculous.
I thought it was seven, but nine. It's not a lot.
Two wins, three draws, the
equivalent of three wins.
Yeah, two wins and three draws. That was, and the rest of it was, and including that horrible sequence of Cardiff, Bournemouth, Southampton. Don't tell me which order it was in. I can't remember.
Bournemouth and then Cardiff.
Yeah, and as we look forward to the last game of the decade against Bournemouth, you hope the writing's not on the wall, but. It was just a horror show. And as we've said on The Raw, we came away from that game almost laughing. It was so bad.
Yeah, I think that was the key. That was the key sequence in determining Chris's future at the club.
Or lack of it.
The Bournemouth game was just ridiculous. And I do remember, after the match, we sort of convened for the post-mortem, and we just thought, well, this is almost impossible to analyse this game with any kind of rationality. It was
a comedy result.
It was so completely hat stand. It didn't really represent the quality of the team that we had. We're clearly a better team than that. But we just got caught out on the break every single time. Bournemouth's finishing was absolutely superb. And by the last 20 minutes, as the fans were streaming out, and you could see a few of the players looking at the sidelines thinking, oh, can't we just walk out as well?
Can we walk, yeah. 75 minutes, and you think, I'll take 5-0 now, just forget it.
So that one was kind of like a comedy defeat, and I kind of thought, well, that's so bad, I'm not even going to sort of try and rationalise it. Mm. But then I thought, well, we still got this game on, I think, the Tuesday or Wednesday against Cardiff.
Yep.
And massive six-pointer. We've got to turn up. We have to react, and we just laid an absolute egg. And I think anyone out there that knows me knows I'm very much my glass is always half full,
and my
glass is always blue tinted. But that game
you could not That, you could not excuse that at all.
That game just, I said, no, that's it. We're done. I mean, I actually thought we were down at that point.
Yeah.
And
well, I think it was the game that Tony decided enough was enough.
Yeah. If I put myself in Tony's seat watching that, I'd just be looking at my investment going down the drain, quite frankly, and just thinking, how on earth can we rescue
this? I'm just wondering if he was going to use the same level of Anglo-Saxon as you do normally during the game.
Well, I mean, I just, you know, that's for the first time in you know, since Mickey Adams' second stint, I just walked out onto the concourse. I said, he's gone.
Yeah.
He's gone. I don't know if he won't be here next year. He might not even last
a week. Didn't want to believe it, but I couldn't actually counter-argue your point.
No, I didn't want to believe it either, but...
Especially after what the bloke has done for us.
Absolutely.
And we'll get to that later in the show, but Yeah, especially after. And it was just such a horrible, feeble demise, wasn't it? It was just... It reminds me of sort of like, you know, the end of the 30 seconds of Countdown. It doesn't finish with a great thing. It's da-da-da-da-da-da. And that was Houghton's career at the Albion. You know, really sort of upbeat and da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah, I mean, it just... Yeah, I just thought we were really feeling the pressure. I think the fans were feeling the pressure. Players clearly feeling the pressure. Chris was feeling the pressure, and Tony and the board were feeling the pressure, and it was all getting a little bit too much for us. And then we went into sort of deep survival mode. I remember the 0-0 at Wolves, which, you know, a massively valuable point.
Yeah.
You know,
nearly got something at Spurs as well.
Secured in the most miserly of ways, but. That's basically we were in the sea and we were hanging on to that point as if it was a bit of driftwood.
Absolutely.
To get us back to shore. And then the game against Tottenham, I don't think I've ever seen such an overtly negative performance.
Especially when you see what's happened this time, you know, yesterday, and we were recording this on Friday, 27th. Especially when you see what's happened on, you know, the change around the fact that we then stuffed Spurs at home. And actually, you know, gave them a game that we're actually a bit miffed about that we haven't come away with anything from. You know, the turnaround has just been extraordinary.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's just why I think it's interesting that we've had such a fascinating year of contrasts, but also a decade of contrasts when you look at the start points, you know, for the decade and the start point for this year and how things have changed. Over those two time periods, it's been an absolutely amazing time to be an Albion fan.
Yeah.
But we don't have
the odd stinking Albion again.
We were put through the mill. But yeah, I mean, so we had the Wolves and the Spurs sort of rear guard action. Spurs very unlucky to lose to an annoyingly good goal, but
yeah,
I just thought the effort of the players there was actually heroic. I mean,
I don't think anyone had a bad game.
I was waiting.
Especially when you compare it to Sheffield United.
I was waiting for Michael Caine to lead us in a chorus of Men of Harlech. And
what?
Well, it was like Rourke's Drift, wasn't it?
Oh, I see, yeah.
From the movie.
Oh, I thought you were going to talk about Self-Preservation Society. that would have been back in April, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, and like I say, it was Palace that basically sort of bailed us out.
Yeah, I mean, of course, and then, you know, we had that magical afternoon at Sellers Park. How often do you hear that phrase?
Well, lately, not too bad at the moment, but yeah.
But you know what an absolute crackerjack day out that was.
Because Palace had an appalling record at home. Their record at home was so poor. We fancied it.
We did fancy it, and the players really wanted it. And I think they for the first time in a few years, we really wanted it more.
Yep.
We really wanted it more than them.
And again, look forward to just, you know, a couple of weeks ago, batter them for 75 minutes.
Yeah.
And again, look up for it more than they do. You know, it gives me hope for the sort of the future of the club, certainly for this season, is when you see a certain level of attitude that comes out. You know, we came out of the blocks against Spurs. We came out of the blocks against Palace. I mean, we have stinkers like the Sheffield United game from just before Christmas. But they are being outnumbered by the decent performances, I think, and that's in direct flat contrast to what had gone gone on earlier this year.
Yeah, I would certainly agree with that. I think there is character in this side.
There's a lot more belief. I think the character. To be fair, I think the character was always there. They were certainly miffed. Certainly, the forward players were miffed. In the last days and last weeks of Houghton, you know, that everything was being focused on defence. And to be fair, Chris Houghton did, you know, he met his first obligation was to keep us in the Premier League. I think it's probably going to be fair to say that we would be horribly struggling if his services had been retained. I think just about everyone said, yeah, it's the right decision. But I think the spirit was always there, apart from, you know, after 75 minutes against Bournemouth, you could see them just saying, you know, enough's enough, lads, you know, can we raise the right flag here?
Yeah. I mean, an interesting combination of those two things, the character and the fear and the terrible performances, was probably one of my favourite days of the whole year, which was the FA Cup quarterfinal at Millwall.
Yeah.
Which was just a hysterically funny day in the end. I mean...
Yeah. It was for you. I mean, I had to be at my sister's place and she got very cross with me for watching the football all the time. You, on the other hand, carried through till about Tuesday, if I remember.
Pretty much. I mean, we were so diabolical. And yeah, Millwall's a difficult place to play when it's full.
But it's a good place to go because it's a surrounding area. Not surrounding area of Millwall. It's your old going to Borough Market, the pub's there. It's that day out that we missed since we've left the Championship. It's a good day out, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And the atmosphere is incredible. It was, you know, at some points it was absolutely deafening. And, you know, Millwall were winning thoroughly, deservedly. And, you know, we're all on our way out. And I think on 83 minutes, I turned to our good friend Vicky. I said, well, at least we've only got seven more minutes of this rubbish.
Yeah.
That might not have been the word
not,
I used.
No,
I
didn't
know. Of this,
back to the
of this to endure, and then we'll just go and queue up for the train. And
hang on, don't forget, you're held behind, aren't you, at Millwall? So
Well, quite a few people actually did leave. They were on the platform when Lacardia scored and B, when March scored.
Some of them, right.
I think some actually successfully managed to get back in. So,
Okay.
But what a crazy last few minutes. And, you know, Solly came on and just transformed the game, you know.
He did that a couple of times earlier in the season.
He would do well to watch a video of that
absolutely
cameo appearance and remind himself that he can actually do it. Because,
well, yeah, I mean, that's something we'll talk about in a bit. But, you know, he has dropped away horribly, hasn't he?
Yeah. Mm. And... Lacardia scored and was
a very good goal.
It was a very good goal. It was really well taken, and you know, I politely applauded it, thinking it was all in vain.
Yes. There's our consolation.
And then, you know, 95th minute.
Alvin Martin's son.
And Alvin Martin's son did us a favour and flapped away. And
the rest, as they say, is a mystery.
And then it was just absolute scenes. I just thought, if this goes to penalties, we're definitely going to win because we do not deserve it. And that's how penalty shootouts work.
Unless you're Germany.
Yeah, the team that has played their heart out and been robbed of their chance of victory is nearly always the one that loses. And
the momentum goes with you, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the Millwall fella got sent off for stamping on Lewis Dunk, who would have been a penalty taker.
If I recall correctly, didn't we have a goal incorrectly disallowed in injury time?
Yes, we did.
In extra time,
yes, we did. And to be honest, their first goal shouldn't have stood because the way that Glenn Murray is completely taken out, VAR would have changed it.
Yeah.
You know, but I was hoping to get through the whole hour without mentioning that, but damn. Talking of goals, do you remember who scored the first one of the year?
I do not know.
Step forward, Dale Stevens. At the corner. I don't know if you remember, we scored two goals in 2 minutes, both from corners.
Oh, of course. Blimey.
And the other one was? It's only a year, Andy.
I can't remember.
Have you got this kind of anti-Alzheimer's? You can remember what you have for breakfast. You can't remember a year ago.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. So it was Shane Duffy. So who do you think is, in all games, is the leading scorer of 2019 for the Albion?
Oh, good question. I'm probably still going to go for Glenn Murray.
In all games, five in the league, three in the cups. Mopai second, he's got seven. Murray with 8. And then after that, we're down to 3 from Webster, Gross and Duffy. Trossard's piled in with a couple. So is Dunk. Andoni has 4, but 2 in the league, 2 in the cups. Knockout has 3, 1 in the league, 2 in the cups. And then you've got the... I'll tell you what, here's the list. And tell me who's missing from the 2019 scorers. Stevens, Duffy, Gross, Murray, Proper. Yes, Proper.
Yes, amazing. Get another highlight.
Yes. Andoni with 4, Knockout, Mopai, Trossard, Connolly, Webster, Dunk, Bissouma. He scored against Bournemouth in the cup. Locardia had 2 in the cup. Solly March, who have I missed out?
Has Jose got one?
No. Nope. Step forward, Hayden Roberts.
Oh, in the
cup game against Villa.
Carabao Cup.
Yes.
An excellent performance from him. That for me, you know, we're sort of randomly sort of shifting around from topic to topic.
Fine.
But I enjoyed that game. It was real fun. And for me, a mini highlight of the year, watching what was essentially an under 18 side,
yeah,
take on, you know, Villa's first choice 11, more or less.
Do you go with the
ups? And actually competing really well. They were worried, and when we pulled it back to 2-1,
yeah,
they started to sweat a little bit.
Absolutely. Does it bother you that that we pay 15 quid to see the kids?
No, I enjoyed it. Mm.
Let's put it this way. Do you go with the feeling where, hang on, if I knew that we're only going to play kids, I wouldn't have turned up?
No, I mean, speaking for myself, I would still have turned up.
Mm.
Because I'm intrigued by this group that we now have. And again, this is a sort of a difference from, you know, when we started at the beginning of the decade. Is that we're now producing midfielders and forwards, not just a factory of centre halves.
True.
Because we don't spend much money. Well, I mean, we do spend a lot of money, but in relative terms,
yeah,
compared to the rest of the division, we're not regarded as big spenders in this division. And we will need to convert a couple of these players at least, which could end up saving us like 50 or 60 million quid.
Mm-hmm.
And the setup seems to be more solid now. It's the academy's been in place for a good few years now, and now we're starting to finally see a much higher quality of player come out of it, and consistently throughout the different areas of the team rather than just one. So watching them play was really interesting, because they were playing against a fully grown team.
Not quite Villa's sort of like first 11, but not far off it.
But they're all experienced players.
Do you know how many players went out on loan from the Albion in the last January transfer window?
No, I'm going to say about 10.
That was 16.
16.
16. 3 of whom were officially first team players. But yeah, 16, including Ben White.
Hmm.
But also I think Aaron Connolly was considered an academy player at the time. So yeah, a lot went out. I mean, this is where you got 80's sort of slight whinget of, buy it alone, what have you. But you know, this is the nature of what you have when you've got an academy turning out decent players. Some are going to, second, third division places. But, you know, when you look at the likes of Ben White, as you said, we've got decent defenders, we're turning them out. And Ben is actually going on loan to each and every sort of division, and each one's higher than the previous one. His team's doing very well. He's doing very well. And it's not going to be that he's a shoo-in for next season, but he's almost certainly going to be in the first team squad next season, much to Leeds United's chagrin, which is, you know, funnier still.
Exactly. And this is really healthy for the club going forward. The players are now getting experience in high quality divisions and at the right end of those divisions.
And not even in this country necessarily.
No, but, you know, having players that, at reasonable size teams, we've got 2 at St. Pauli.
Lacardia's at Hoffenheim, but I think he's kind of more one of those on his way down rather than way up.
Yeah, McAllister at Boca. Is he at Boca Juniors now, or is he back at Argentina's Juniors?
I can't remember. Yeah.
I think he's still at Boca. But
we've also got Percy Tau, who may or may not be sort of sold before we even get to see him play here.
Yeah, but he's played...
He's played in the Champions League and none of our lot have.
Played in the Champions League and competed very well in the Champions League. So these players are getting good experience. And again, I think we will benefit from that next season. I think it was interesting to read Andy Naylor's piece in The Athletic about McAllister this week, where, according to his sources, the club are very interested in bringing McAllister in next season. Argentina have a slew of internationals coming up. I think they've got World Cup qualifiers and Copa America. And I think another two or three performances for Argentina would pretty much nail his
qualification,
his eligibility for
okay
for a work permit. And he's the sort, you know, on paper at least, he's the sort of dynamic, physical, but attack-minded midfield player that, you know, we could do with a bit of help in that department.
Absolutely. If there's a bit of pace about him as well, who knows? Okay, so we're talking about sort of who could be here, who might not be here. We've just very quickly run over 2019 and our thoughts, certainly of the first part of it. I'm going to stick a gun to your head now. Not literally. That's wrong. That's very naughty. Who is your player, Albion first team player of 2019, the calendar year?
For me, I think because the chopping and changing of the team, I think for me it's between Ryan and Dunk. I think I'd go for Lewis Dunk as my player of the calendar.
Damn you, I wanted an argument. No, if one was to give it to Ryan, I don't think anyone would have too much.
I just think they've played to a consistently high standard throughout the year. You just don't see them having poor games.
Apart from slams on breaks Sheffield United just before Christmas.
Yeah, apart from Sheffield United, but
there's the odd dropsy here and there. But let's face it, they're rare, aren't they?
Extremely rare. They're so reliable. And they've certainly contributed to the points column for us. And I just think, you know, their work ethic is just exceptional.
Sure. No, I'm going to go for Lewis Dunk as well. I think that's, you know, he's also, that you have to remember, he's also made the step up to captain. But at a time when, certainly when he started the year, Bruno was captain, but he wasn't playing. Bruno came back in. But Lewis Dunk made the step up to captain. And I think that he's done that with, you know, well, it's fairly seamless, probably because he'd done the job itself. Now, I've heard the criticism, he's not a leader, he's not a baller, he's not this. No, he's the fella who knows exactly what Potter wants from him. He knew what Hughton wanted from him. He is the leader. He does actually play and lead by example. He will fight his teammates' corner, but he doesn't have to do it by screaming lumps out of everyone just to get what he wants. So I think, like, you know, for me, it was always going to be a shoo-in that he was going to be captain. And I think he stepped up absolutely wonderfully.
Yeah, I think I would have been one of those early critics of his on-the-field captainy style. But I agree with you. I think he leads by example. He has that presence on the pitch now. And despite his age, he's got, you know, he has that seniority there now. And just a great club servant, but also just constantly improving.
Okay, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, on podcast, and just about every podcast platform. Say that when you've got someone else's teeth in. We'll be hosting the Albion Roar. So, you know, do listen to it. If you can't find us, well, you haven't got this message, but also you're not trying hard enough. Just before we go into Shirt of the Week, I just want to say something about Radio Reverb. This is a community radio station. It is run by volunteers for the benefit of the city. The diversity and the interest that there is across the city and across the broadcasting shows that we have on here, they cover many aspects of the life of Brighton and Hove. We obviously have us playing, doing our football stuff, but there are LGBT shows, live music shows, third generation shows, gardening, food and drink, politics, business, and I've probably left out a whole load of others. The music scene, of whether it's world music or punk or rock or soul, is all there. If there's anything that you want want to hear from it, then just let us know. But Radio Reverb is run, can only be funded by donations, sponsorship and grants. And we are not allowed to accept advertising. So if you like what you hear from Radio Reverb, not just the Albion Roar, but anything on Radio Reverb, please do donate. We'll be having a Reverbathon actually in March. It's our annual fundraiser just to help us pay for all the licenses and the rents and the rates and everything that we need to keep our license and our radio station going. But if you do feel like you want to donate towards this brilliant, what we call an asset to the community, just go to radioreverb.com. There's a big donate button on the front page. And if you can chuck in a few quid, appreciate it's Christmas and the time that I'm asking you is a bit tricky. But if you can chuck in a few quid to help keep this brilliant radio station going, local radio is under threat. The local radio stations are being turned into national ones, and we don't agree with this. So we want to keep this as a local radio station for the community. So if you do feel like helping us, please do. So just go to radioreverb.com and hit the donate button. Talking to people who are very kind sponsors, Phil Shelley, who has for the past 10 years been the sponsor of the Albion Roar Show, he gives us every week a shirt of the week, and yet every year a shirt of the year. Now, what the idea of that is that, and this is a brilliant medium for radio, Phil will give us a shirt. We've got to describe it and see if we can work out who it is. Andy is looking that shirt on his phone. Could you describe this year's shirt of the year?
Well, this is an absolute beauty. It's really nice. It's quite a simple design. It's like a sort of dark navy blue.
Yep.
Body with a picture print on it with the letters ARS on one panel, and then I think either like a fox or some sort of animal or bear on one of the other sort of panels.
I hadn't spotted that.
Yeah.
I'd have got it from that actually if I hadn't. It's kind of
I've got an educated guess as to what it might be.
Okay, go on.
Now.
What colour are we talking about?
So we got this dark navy blue, but then we've got some really nice sort of yellow and sort of burgundy collar, and on the sleeves as well, the yellow and red stripes. Very much looks like a team from Catalonia. It's sponsored by Qatar Airways. Now,
could be anyone then, couldn't it?
Well, I'm going to guess it's either a team, either like a Barcelona B team, or I'm going to go out on a limb here and say it's from a team in Andorra.
I'm afraid to say in both cases you're wrong. Actually, no. I hadn't noticed the watermark on the shirt. And if that was the case, I'd have got ARS and I'd have got it straight away. And I'm pretty certain that fox is a wolf. So, Phil Shelley's 2019 Shirt of the Year. Is this will probably surprise you, but here is my shirt. And it's the 2019-20 third shirt of Italian giants AS Roma. It's not ARS, it's ASR.
Oh.
This year, Nike, that's Phil's spit, not mine, yeah, decided to reprise their Futura brand, which was originally used in the mid-90s, on some iconic kits, including the likes of Arsenal, Borussia Dortmund and PSG. They've rolled it out this year to their elite clubs. Oh, it does sound bitter, doesn't it? They're elite clubs. Mm. As well as the likes of Spurs and Chelsea. But the best one for me is the Roma shirt. Association Sporting Roma. I've got AD's teeth in today. Yeah. Sorry. Association Sporting Roma currently sit fourth in Serie A and play their home games at the 70,000 capacity Stadio Olimpico, the largest sports facility in Rome. In their 92 years of existence, they've picked up three unmemorable nicknames: Il Giallorosso, the yellow and reds; La Lupa, the she wolf; and La Magica, the magic one. The epitome of a one-club player, Francesco Totti, played 619 league games for Roma, scoring 250 times during his 25-year playing career. There's been loads of England-Roma links, players and managers, and I'll leave it to the listener to list all the Brighton links. I'm struggling on that one, I'm afraid.
No, yeah. I can't think of any.
And Phil ends his message saying, I hope you all had a good Christmas. Happy New Year to everyone. But yeah, that shirt is actually quite lovely, isn't it?
It's a beaut. Yeah, I really like it.
I like the red and yellow of the Roma shirt anyway. I mean, it's quite just the perfect tone. And I've actually based my business cards on something not dissimilar to that. So it is rather lovely. You're listening to the Albion Roar on Radio Reverb. I'm with Andy Bass. We're going through 2019. We'll be going through the 2010s shortly. So Chris Hughton, not unsurprisingly, was asked to go. And we brought in the Swansea City and former Östersund's manager, Graham Potter, a little bit of an unknown quantity, but a manager who should have got to the FA Cup semi-final last year after Swansea were cheated out of their win against Manchester City. A bit of an unknown quantity, but I think we're quite happy with him, aren't we?
Yeah, very much so. Very much so. It was sad that Chris had to go, but I think he did. But I think he goes with everybody's best wishes in whatever he does in the future. Uh-huh. And if he's ever back at the Amex in any capacity, he'll certainly get a good reception.
I'd hope so.
From me at least, but I imagine pretty much everybody else there in recognition of what a terrific job he did. But move on he did, and Potter came in. For me, as soon as Chris went, I just thought Potter's the number one, should be the number one target. I think he fits with Tony's vision of his ideal of what he wants this club to be in terms of the way we're sort of trying to modernise ourselves both on and off the pitch, and I think trying to modernise the way that we play. And it's really, you know, Potter is an innovative manager. You know, this season is very much a learning period for the players compared to what they were doing last year. Such a massive gear crunch.
Mm-hmm.
And I think,
but it's the same squad. He hasn't actually done a massive overhaul, has he?
No, and I think considering how radical the overhaul of the playing style has been, it's made our opening to this the opening half of this season more impressive. I mean, it's certainly been frustrating in places because I do feel we've left probably maybe half a dozen points on the pitch, to be perfectly honest, but in a way, that is sort of a testament to how far we have come. That we feel that we've actually deserved more than we should have than we've actually got.
I mean, at the halfway point of the season, here we are, 19 games, 20 points. Which, you know, when you're looking at your magic 38 games and 40 points that's going to keep you up, you don't want to have the squeaky bum time like we've had last season. But I think that the one of the things that I'm kind of genuinely optimistic about was two things. One, we're not going to have the same, almost certainly not going to have the same car crash second half of season that we had last season. Otherwise, that's it. We're down anyway. If we get 9 points in the second half of the season, that's 29 points, and we're down. So that's that. But the other part of it is that because now we've got this system in place. I mean, you try and describe Graham Potter's system in one fell swoop, is that hopefully the players will more and more grow into what it is that they're wanted and needed from them, and stop dropping points. That, I mean, you said half a dozen. I mean, I went through it with someone else recently. Said, well, he maintained it was about 14 points that could and should have got something out of.
Then I think my half a dozen is definitely safe. Then,
I'd have taken the half dozen. It puts us on 26, mid table obscurity, and that's fine. That's not to say that we should do what we did last year and scream out for a good cup run. I think we should concentrate on we've had a good cup run. That's fine. I don't want to necessarily wait another 30 odd years for it, or whatever it was, 37 years. But concentrate on the league, and so long as we can actually progress and grow, and I think that a lot of the ingredients, a lot of the meat and potatoes are already in place for us to do that.
I think you can see that some players are now adjusting to it. I think in particular Aaron Moy, who I thought started his career with us rather slowly and certainly didn't seem to be the player that would have tormented us in the championship and tormented other sides. And really in the last, you know, 5 or 6 weeks now, I just, you know, he's
undroppable at the moment.
He's astonishing. I mean, I think he's our best outfield player.
At the moment.
He makes things happen. He's very decisive. He's a lot, you know, seems to be a lot stronger.
He seems to have a lot of awareness about him as well. There's kind of the eyes in the back of the head. One pass I noticed that's actually quite common with him is just that little chip over someone's head, often over his own shoulder. And you think, how did you know so-and-so was there? You know, I've seen that little pass. You know, the awareness around him, the immediate 10 yards around him seems to be very, very good.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, and obviously watching how David Prepper and Dale Stevens have developed their game, or they might say returned their game to their natural game.
Yeah.
You know, it's like watching two different players compared to last season. You know, Prepper in Purpur in particular. I don't think in particular. I think both of them have been a lot more positive. Positive this season.
Well, it's the players who were here last season, the ones that seem to have made the greatest adjustment. They seem to be most comfortable with it. It's like, you know, they're waiting for the shackles to be released. And, you know, here he is, comes in with his idea. I'd love to win the fly on the wall on the first day. So, right, okay, lads, we're going to be doing something else. And they might have got a little bit of an hallelujah out of it. I don't know. But what it goes from where they were to how quickly it was within the pre-season as to sort of like getting the ideas in. And Potter himself did actually say, you know, I have a wonderful set of professional people to work with here. You might think they're lads, 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 but they knuckle down and they do what they need to do. And it's kind of impressive that he's got all these professional people out there whose game, and I don't think there's anyone who's regularly playing whose game hasn't improved. I can think of a few who've regressed, but they're not even making the bench.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with that. And I think there are certain little signs of things happening that weren't happening last season. I still don't think we're getting the volume of goals that we want from midfield, but I think the midfield is now it's now shooting more. Mm-hmm. You know, eventually Alzati
one might go in.
Alzati's always got proper-esque qualities when it comes to, like, you know, not scoring a goal. But I mean, he's had like nearly like 10 or so really great shots. Or certainly very good opportunities. And it's good that we're creating those. Alzati and Moy in particular have got their shooting boots on. Sadly, not as accurate.
Not as accurate as
we'd like. But, you know, we are having shots. I mean, we'd go games without having a single decent goal attempt last season. And now that just isn't.
I should have looked up the stats for that because, you know, the stats from... you know, the end of last season to, you know, compared to, I think some wag did actually say that we had more shots on target against Watford in the first game of the season than we'd had, you know, in previous 2019. I think that's probably a little bit harsh, but it's probably, you know.
It's probably ballpark close though.
Probably, yeah. And we've got to look at the players who have kind of dropped out and really haven't really made it. And we've got to sort of, you know, look towards Jack and Bash. We've got to look to probably, for me, the biggest disappointment. I was going to talk about, actually, before I talk about the biggest disappointment, I'm going to say that Alzati, as much as people have been talking about Aaron Connolly's ascent, his ascent has probably been even more spectacular. You know, he too has, but he is playing constantly. And playing really well, and he has far more responsibilities in the middle of the park and as a an occasional defender. I think some of his performances, not always, but you know, some of his performances have been astonishingly good.
He's good at finding space.
Yes, he doesn't look out of place in a midfield alongside Purpur and Stephen.
And he's got good feet, so he's good at finding space. He's good at making space with his feet again. You know, against Tottenham, his shooting needs to be better. I mean,
well, I think everyone's does, frankly.
You know, the first one that he pulled wide was pretty powder puff, and I think he should be very disappointed with it. Second one shot with slightly more venom, but the height was good for the keeper to save it. He maybe should have elevated it a little bit. But that's just practice.
Yeah.
That's
It'll
just training. It's
It'll
practice
come.
And training. Just keep working
and
at
he
it.
And stopped
keep...
diving as well.
Yeah. Yeah, that was nipped in the bud after two games.
Yes, it was. But the person who's disappointed me most this season is Solly March. He's just seemed to have sunk to nowhere. He played the other day and he was a shadow of himself.
I think with Solly, it's a confidence thing. I mean, again, he had a serious injury, and I think players are always mindful about trying to avoid getting it again, getting injured again. But we've seen games where he's just been an absolute menace, and this really is his time, because football,
really should be.
Football is now being played in such a way that people with his skill set are the ones that benefit the most. They're the
you take two looks at it, you think that Solly March would be an ideal Graham Potter type player.
Yeah,
and when he's played, he's been so.
I'm not saying he's a. But you have to look at someone like Trent Alexander-Arnold and see how what a fantastic player he is. And
yes.
March, whilst not being as good as Trent Alexander-Arnold remotely, but he plays a similar game and he can do it. You know, he And that's a really important position now in the way that the modern Premier League is playing football. Mm. If you've got someone that can tie people up on that wing and get good crosses in, and March can get good crosses in, and he can take people on, but he can also track back and tackle and defend. I mean, this really is his moment, and I hope for his sake as a player and for our sake as supporters that he can rediscover that confidence that has got him this far in his career so far already.
Okay, so we're going to cover the 2010s this decade in just a moment, but just last question before moving on to that. So bearing in mind where we were this time last year, there was no panic, there was no worry, not a huge amount. We were mid-table. So given what we were then and where we're at now, do you have too many worries about the rest of the season?
I wouldn't say I'm worried, but I think we really have to guard against complacency. I think you might need slightly more points to stay up this season. So I think you need to nudge that 38-40 mark, because I think there are signs of life in the other teams. I don't think three teams are going to drop like a stone. I think it is more competitive down there. I think we have it within us to make it more comfortable than we did last season.
Yeah.
But we are going to have to work for it every single week. And, there are no days off.
No, absolutely.
There are no days off this season. They've got to be 100% every week.
Don't want to have the scare that we had last
year. If I think
year.
Of any more cliches, I'll reel them out.
That's fine. But we're getting to not only the last game of the year, but we're also getting to the last game of the decade. And we were discussing this on the bus on the way over because we like to use public transport because we're sort of good-minded citizens. The 2010s. Now, I know you've only been with us for 5 minutes, but the best decade, I'm going to put this to you, the best decade in the Albion's history.
Well, I have been watching the Albion for 2 decades.
Mm-hmm.
and of the two, this one has just nudged it. I mean, they've both been two terrific decades, actually. But, obviously I'm not a lifelong supporter of the Albion, but the last 20 years I've been going. And this has been one of the best decades of football I think I've ever seen. What haven't you had?
Well, let's look at where we started. Hello, we started at with Dean. I mean, the last few weeks, AD has said, and our first game of the decade was against Torquay. Well, I mean, obviously it was the FA Cup, but and I'm happy for him to tell me that. That's fine, no problem. But, Falmer was still, 18 months away. It was being built and we were all excited by Jack Straw's photographs. And, we were looking to hopefully get the season tickets done soon and what have you. And this is this decade. This is what we're looking at in 2010. This is where the club was at. Mid-table, third division side. We'd just taken on one of the greatest players of the modern era as manager. And, things were happening, but, there's a massive difference to where we were compared to where we are now.
Absolutely incredible. I was actually at that game in Torquay.
Right.
I remember it being extremely cold. we did win. So it was worth it. You look back now, it is incredible. And it's the way that everybody played a part.
Mm.
Everybody played a part. The fans absolutely, got it, kept everybody going.
Yeah. It was kind of self-feeding almost, wasn't it?
The fans wouldn't let it die. I think, particularly that, the week to save Falmer, which culminated in the Wickham sit-in and all these sort of things. But just like the sheer energy.
The marches on the Labour conference, the letter writing, the flowers.
The energy and innovation displayed by the fans was matched by Tony Bloom's
cash.
Pockets and a combination of the two. And all the while, the team delivered on the pitch.
Yeah.
We're against, with no money. Certainly the beginning of the decade, we had no money to spend on players. It was all going on Falmer, the planning application and everything like that. And despite that, the players and the management, they gritted it out. They achieved success. An absolutely incredible opening opening to the decade. That whole whole story.
And well, it was everything was gearing up towards film, and then we got it in 20. And obviously, the first day in 2011, and the summer that summer of 2011, the play that we saw at the Theatre Royal. There was the Sussex Senior Cup final, but there was the friendly against Spurs, the game against Doncaster. You think, you know, it's just, you know, astonishing.
Against Doncaster was just incredible.
It was a free hit though, wasn't it?
So what was that? It was 2011?
6th of August 2011.
2011. And you think back to the game at Hereford.
Which was 14 years earlier.
14 years previous. And the fight from those 14 years to get to that moment. And, you know, when Buckley scored that second goal, I was in tears. It was just, it was like you were in a Hollywood movie.
A really bad one, admittedly.
I don't know. I thought it was a great 5 out of 5, 5 stars for me, one. But you felt like you were in a movie. You just the emotion of it. You just felt utterly drained. And I loved the way that, you know, just cheekily kicked the keeper and just struts off into Legends Corner. With a wry smile on his face, and that everyone did.
He was only 20 at the time. He probably had no idea of the gravity of what he'd done.
And, you know, I mean, even by then, I mean, I'd been did me bit with all the petitions marching.
Absolutely,
and
whatnots,
and the campaigning element of it. And, you know, I'd like to think I did put my 2p in. And, it was just such a tremendous journey for everyone. And
for all the naysayers that said, oh, you know, we won't get 14,000, you know, we're in the third division when all this stuff was happening, you know, we won't get 14,000, we won't get 16,000. I mean, there was the old thing of build it and they will come, because too many people had actually put too much emotion in of their emotional and actual lives into making sure this thing was going to happen. And it was just it was too big to fail, but it was just certainly too popular to fail. You know, and we were campaigning for a 22,000 stadium.
With a break-even figure of 12,000.
Something like that, yeah. And then you look at it now and you think, well, they always had it in mind it was going to be a 30,000 stadium. And even then, when the first season of the Premier League, you realise it's not big enough again. So, you know, the trajectory from 2010 to now has, for the most part, been up. We've had a couple of little wobbles, you know, the time under Hoopier last season. But in the great scheme of things, we've had 3 playoffs, 2 promotions, no relegations.
FA Cup semi-final.
An FA Cup semi-final. And a case could be made for arguably the best manager the club has ever had.
Yeah.
And I think, like I said, that the whole thing culminates. When we start at 2010, I mean, here we are now at the end of 2019. Okay, fine. But for me, the big marker, that big sort of bang, was April 2017. That's when everything made sense.
Yeah, and for the club to have, it's all been about belief. The club has always believed, you know, certainly Tony, clarity of vision from the man at the top. And that's where it all starts. You need someone in charge that is properly motivated, that clearly understands the challenges involved in achieving these goals, and having someone who's single-mindedly capable of devising a correct strategy and sticking with it and pushing it through. And every step of the way, Tony has rarely had a misstep. Hoopier appointment aside, well, you know, not every appointment works out. It's pretty hard picking out a decent football manager, so give him that one.
Absolutely.
And he's just led from the front, and I know there's people complain about this and that at the club, but I still feel that we still have that core of family spirit about the club. With AITC, I just think, maybe it's because of where I sit in the West Stand. Like, you know, all the people that bought their tickets there had been season ticket holders with Dean for like 12 years or whatever. And so it's all the same. It's all the same old faces. It's still your friends that are there, but it's just now.
It's basically a big social with 90 minutes of football.
But now we're watching it with, you know, 24,000 other people.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you think back at, say, sort of like a you know, a paint pot trophy game against Boston United
with Forest Green Rovers. We have actually played Forest Green Rovers
with 1,300 people in with Dean.
Yeah,
and now look at like 30,000 as regular. We'd think 25,000 was a bad crowd now.
Absolutely, I mean,
it's just astonishing.
Yeah.
To think where we came from, and pinch myself every time I walk in there.
I mean, for all the fact we say, oh, 22 years ago we were this and we're bottom of the table, last year, just look at where we were 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Mid to lower table, yeah, in the third division. As you say, having sort of faced that. I mean, Russell Slade, I think, did actually sort of pull us up by the bootstraps a little bit. I think that would actually be a harder thing for Gus to have actually done, you know, to have taken. Russell Slade gave him a little bit of a platform,
yeah,
but Gus really sort of launched us into this decade. And, you know, his demise is sort of something that we can all sort of, you know, have a good chunter about in the pubs. But, you know, being no doubt, Gus Poyet was someone who really put us on the map.
Yeah, I mean, talking to the start of the day, it was, again, another thing we were discussing on the bus on the way in.
As good citizens.
In the discussion about, you know, what our favourite goals were and stuff. And
Elliot, well, come on then, mate.
Elliot Bennett's thunderbolt against Walsall.
Were you there?
I was there, yeah.
Yeah, and you're probably with me, weren't you?
Might
have got away with it and not been with me.
It was a brilliant day out, and we confirmed the championship with, like, what, four games to spare or something ridiculous. And basically,
no one does that.
And we took over the.
And we had the Charlton day out. We had that Peterborough day out, the one I missed, the Peterborough day out. I mean, that's got to be one of your favourite all-time days out, let alone brilliant football or anything. But, you know, as days out go, you know, Charlton was brilliant. Yeah. Again, there was that zeitgeist. There was that time. There was that moment. We were still at Withdean, meeting up with the Millwall fans who'd just beaten Palace, you know, that day. You know, there was this sort of lovely, hazy blue sort of autumnal day, and it was just perfect. And you thought, this is all going to be okay.
But it was part of, like, the Hollywood movie that, you know, in our last season at Withdean, that we would get promoted, and in fine style. I mean, that was one of the all-time great seasons, I think, for us.
It's that blanket that the old dears had.
We were crushingly dominant.
We were
in that
Nigel Adkins
in that season, absolutely fantastic. And to get promoted and take that promotion into the new stadium the following season was just, you know, you couldn't make it up.
Oh yeah. But then you look at the 2017 promotion, because the 2016 season, 15-16 season, was a bit of a surprise, because the previous one to that, 4-4-2, saying, oh, Brighton are going to finish 24th.
Yep.
I think not. But I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah.
You know, the first 20 games unbeaten and being conned out of it at the end. You know, you knew full well. You thought, there is no way these players. And we've heard the stories afterwards. The next day after the Sheffield Wednesday playoffs, the players were brought in the next day, and they were just, we're going to do this. There's no way we're not. And it's almost like pre-season started then, straight away.
Absolutely. The character displayed by that group of players after, you know, falling short in the semi-final in such heartbreaking fashion, that can really break a team.
Yeah.
That can really break a team. But it didn't break this team. It didn't break this fan base. And they flipping well got the job done the next year. And
that was just astonishing, wasn't it?
It was just,
and the bus parade as well, and
To have like 100,000 people turn out
on a perfect, you know, the sky, perfect duck egg blue sky.
It was great, just walking around town. There's just like kids everywhere in stripes, people like going out to Sunday lunch first, and flags everywhere, and you get down there.
It was a carnival. It was a proper carnival.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic.
It was a carnival. It was a proper carnival. Yeah, and it was just absolutely perfect. So I have to do this. I'm going to put that gun back to your head, that metaphorical gun, because I'm a good citizen. I wouldn't actually ever dare dreaming of using firearms against you, ever, Andy. Well, once or twice I might have been tempted. But your player of the your Albion player of the decade.
It's really, really hard. I think I would probably go for Bruno, just for
being a dude.
Just for being a dude, just for great leadership qualities, great. And I think the way he represented the club, I wouldn't say he's an unsung hero, because his plaudits are very much sung, but he's not kind of like the sort of high-profile player you would expect. But I think in a tumultuous decade, I think he above all, has sort of represented what everything that is good about his football club. I think in terms of talent, there's just players have had pockets of brilliant sort of.
We've seen players grow. I mean, we're back to Lewis Dunk again.
Yeah,
we've seen him grow.
Dunk, I think you could easily make a case for. But I just think
Caldy for being a dream boat.
Yeah, I just think Bruno was a better player than Caldy.
Yeah.
But Caldy would be in there for those sort of more mawkish and sentimental reasons. But I think I would go Bruno.
And who scored the goal of the decade? I mean, you mentioned Bennett's goal against Walsall there. Is that your first pick, or do you think there's something else that could take its place?
I think there are goals. Great goals, A, for what that, you know, how they were constructed and just how flashy and brilliant they were, and other goals for their emotional content. But I think I am going to go for, there are so many goals
sure.
that were great, but I'm going to go for Sebastian Pocconelli's goal.
Again. Were you there?
Against QPR? I was not there.
Wow.
I watched it in a bar in Vienna.
Show off.
Literally having to explain to people in the bar who these two teams were because no one had ever heard of them, but I watched it in the company of some Rapid fans and various and a load of expats and stuff like that. But it was the goal where I knew we were going up.
Sure.
That's the goal. I knew where we were going up. And, you know, I was sort of jumping around like a lunatic, sort of on my own, being looked at oddly by the rest of the pub. You know, after the game, they wouldn't let me leave. They said, "You're not going anywhere, mate. Here's another pint. let's celebrate."
Absolutely.
And it was just, you know, it was an unexpected goal. It was brilliantly executed. You could, you know, watching the fans behind the goal absolutely doing their pieces.
Bedlam, I think the word was.
And that's, I knew we'd done it then. Sure. I knew we'd done it. And that was just like such a great moment. Huh. You know, we were all but up. But really, that was the message that we had sent, because it was a Friday night, and then all the results went our way the following day.
I think Newcastle lost to Sheffield Wednesday. The only time I've ever won Sheffield Wednesday is to win, yeah. I think. No, I'm with you on Bruno. I've got to go with you on Bruno. But just for the sheer stupidity of it, I've got to go for Skalak for his goal against QPR again.
Yep.
I think, one, because he proved us all wrong, because you could see him revving up for it. It was a poor header from Grant Hall back into the mix rather than away. But you could see him revving up for it. And the entire West Stand up, and maybe the entire stadium, was shouting, "No!" And then he hits it. And it's like a tracer.
Yeah.
And no keeper's getting it. The keeper, I think the thing that also really makes it look good is the fact that the keeper did go for it. So you had the flying keeper as well. If the keeper just stood still like Alan Ruff,
yeah,
then it would look okay. But he went for it and got nowhere near it. And so, yeah, so I've got to say that, and don't get me wrong, there are some brilliant contenders, and we talked about this earlier. We're talking about Bridcut against Dagenham and Redbridge. We're talking about Bennett.
Yeah.
We're talking about Sidwell, obviously, against Bristol City. I'm sure there's several others. I think that they were a bit thin on the ground in the 2014 season, but there were some great goals around and about. But that, for me, is just because it has a real boy's own shot.
Yeah.
One of those that you know for what he's going to try it again. Each one's going to end up in Rose End.
Yeah, absolutely. It was an absolute bullet.
Brilliant. And that is all we've got time for. That is it, largely, for 2019 and for the 2010s. This has been the Albion Roar on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, on our podcast on Audio Boom. My name's Alan Wares. AD Packham will be back in time for the 2020s ahead of the Sheffield Wednesday match. Thank you very much indeed for listening. All your support, all your comments, all your abuse. Over the past 10 years, probably about 450, nearly 460 shows we put on over this past decade. We've enjoyed it. And guess what? Sorry, folks, but we'll be back in the 2020s. Thank you very much indeed for listening. Thank you, Andy Bass, today. And we'll see you soon. Cheers. Look so dumb.